But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, it's Scott Brennan again, Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. This is going to be the intro for part two of the Big Brew Festival. I split it into parts because of the length of the audio. So I hope from the first episode you realize that, yeah, the sound gets a little hard when there's a lot of noise in the room, but a lot of really interesting people, enthusiastic people, people who are just beer is their life. And it's neat because as the podcast goes on, people get more uninhibited from the alcohol and they just start coming, showing up to us and talking and things like that. So overall, it was a great festival. This episode will go up and we will be back to our regularly scheduled podcasts, hopefully one a week. Other than that, please enjoy and... please send me some comments, feedback, things like that. But here's Big Brew Part 2.
So, I am joined by another guest on the show, Mr. Abraham Seckler. That might not mean anything to you, but he is the owner?
Yes, one of the two owners.
One of the two owners of Three Beards Brewing Company. I'm actually drinking their black lager right now. It's delicious. So tell us a little bit about the brewery.
So, yeah, we got started probably about 4 years ago. We started launching the company. There were three of us at the time, so that's why there were three beers. But
gotcha.
There's only two now. What we do is when we had the idea for it, when we first started launching, really what we were looking to do was to we realized just how difficult it was for a lot of small and home brewers to get involved in the industry. Yeah. We were experiencing on ourselves, you know, going from that 5 gallons in the kitchen to any sort of, you know, barrel system, multi-barrel system is really tricky. Yeah. It's tough to get the experience. You know, there are a lot of people who do basically slave labor inside breweries just to get the exposure. Yeah,
yep.
Sure. There's only so many breweries and so many people want to get involved. So we designed the company around, we said, all right, well, we are a contract brewing company. We work with a company called Opa Opa in Western Massachusetts. They do a very, very nice job on their own products, and they have a couple of other contracted brands in there. And we said, okay, we're going to contract brew this company, do a 20 and 40 barrel batches at a time. But when we design our recipes, what we do is we find small and home brewers from all over the country. We bring them in. They, have them help design a recipe around our specifications. And then they get paid for some of the work they do up front. And they get a percentage of the profits. So they actually get paid more than they would if they just consulted for another
company.
It's
really interesting, like, because you're bringing in the home brewer into the bigger brewing experience.
That's right. Because the bigger brewing experience, one of the things that is lost is it's not just the challenge of going to a larger system, right? Manufacturing scale-up is always difficult. But the other, you know, you don't think about the regulatory implications, the dealing with, even just dealing with the business aspect of it. I mean, so many great brewers who are real artists just fail, not because they're not making some of the best product in the world, but because they just don't have the experience or the background or didn't get the exposure that they needed to be prepared for what it's like.
It's really interesting because I basically got to the point where, you know, every brewer, I went from a Mr. Beer kit to a partial grain to an all grain, and now I make beer pretty regularly, have the two taps in my fridge, and, you know, the dream is there, of course.
Absolutely.
Maybe I should open my brew, you know, but it's like, oh my God, how can I get that money, how can I do this and quit my job, you know, like
Exactly. It's very scary. It's very daunting.
You got a mortgage to pay, and a wife, and a bulldog at home. You know, it's like, you know, I don't know. It's that very hard. It's really interesting that you bring in, like, someone who can almost, I guess, you kind of contract the beers almost, like.
Yeah. So they have a contract with us, so they are very much attached to that beer. So they get more than just paid for it. They actually get a spot on our website. They get full credit for the design of the beer and the recipe itself. And the idea here is to really give them a resume builder so that they can go get a legitimate job in the industry, start their own brewery if they want to. And they can point to a successful product, a commercial product that's on the shelves and say, hey, I'm the one who designed that.
Wow.
And there's very few opportunities to do that type of thing.
I've never even heard of something like that.
Right.
It's great, man.
And that was really our goal was, you know, there are a lot of contracted beers out there. You know, it's a great model to start building a brand and be able to have the reach. You know, you're not just making a couple kegs at a time, but you're really able to reach a larger audience. So we were able to do that, but we said, you know, we really want to do something a little bit different, and that's when we incorporated this into the business model as well.
So how did it start for you?
Well, for me, personally, actually, that started back in 2007 when I went to Germany, where the...
And you made it back, and you made it back successfully.
I did. I barely did, and I put on quite a few pounds drinking beer there. I went to a little town called Andex in Germany, where there's a little monastery where all these monks have done for hundreds of years is brew beer, and it was the middle of the summer. I had some of the darkest triple box I've ever had in my life. It was 19% ABV, and it was delicious.
Oh,
it was, you know, really manna from heaven. It was just unbelievable. And we sat there, myself and a couple friends of mine sat there drinking. I said, this is amazing. That's always been my inspiration in everything we do. I want to make something good. I want to make something different. But what they did was pure art.
Magic.
Yeah, really. Just
so where is Three Beards based at?
So we do all our brewing right now in Western Massachusetts through our contractor. We'll probably always use them just because we have a great relationship with them. It's very convenient too for us to be able to put out a larger batch to support, because we distribute in Maine, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and North Carolina right now, with some more states on the way. We self-distribute in North Carolina. But what we do is what we strive to do is be able to support that. The problem is that 20 or 40 barrels, you do kind of lose some of the flexibility. So we're in the process of opening a brew pub in Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and we want to do like a nice, small, flexible two-barrel system.
Great.
We can do, when we bring in a new brewer, we can really have them test out some new, you know, more off-the-wall stuff, and we don't have to make the commitment that a 40-barrel batch really
play around and still keep your business.
Exactly, exactly. If we make something that's not great, two barrels is easy to get rid of.
Wow. I basically asked everyone I brought on the show today.
Yes.
A festival like this, like a beer festival, a beer event, it's got to be great for not only the business, but just for you to, like, have people that would never know you, never see you, never heard of you, and
absolutely,
just come taste your beer and say, hey, what's up? I like this. I love this. Where are you based at?
Yeah.
You know, like, even you're sitting here right now. I never met you before. I walked up to your table. Hey, come on. It's like a real nice community kind of thing, but also
it is.
It far reaches, like, you know, you never know, that guy could go back and be like, that Three Beards beer was fucking phenomenal. I want to go visit them, you know, like stuff like that. So it's gotta be really nice to do stuff like this.
It is, and I know I enjoy it. I know my partner really enjoys it, because, you know, especially as a brewer, you don't get that much contact with the people who are, you know, using your product. You know, you're working with the distributors. You know, people will come to your facility and things like that. But because we contract, we lose even that level of contact sometimes. So doing these things are very important for us, because we really get to meet a lot of the people who, you know, because the people who come to these things aren't always just a fan of craft beer, but usually they're home brewers themselves.
Right.
And those are the people that we're really trying to build a relationship and, you know, build a community, help build a community out of. So it's
really interesting. Like, I love your bringing the home brewer on-board approach. That's really interesting. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
So I think you got something original there.
We certainly tried, and really the response has been great. And what I always say to a lot of people I talk to, because there are people who like some of our, some people are fans of one beer and not the other or whatever it is. I said, that's fine. I said, that's the whole nature of it is taste. I said, but honestly, if you think you can do better, I challenge anybody. I said, send your beers to us. We're happy to try anything. If you've got a good product, we can try to commercialize it. If you've got something that you, if we like it, but we want to do something a little bit different, a good brewer, there's the opportunity to even try something else. So we've brought people in on specifically on a beer they've made for us. We brought people in where we said, that's great. I don't think we're going to do that one. Let's do something like this. Let's see what you can do with that. And they, really, we've never been disappointed.
It's really interesting. Now,
thank you.
Here's a different question I asked another guy before.
Sure.
Why do guys who love beer have awesome beers?
I think they go hand in hand.
Why is it though?
Beer is very primal, right? And one of the things I always rail against is the, a beer should always be enjoyed. Beer should always be loved. But I don't want to incorporate the pretentiousness that you get from some other
wine. Whiskey.
Yeah, and I love whiskey and
Me
bourbon
too.
And single
Me
malt,
too.
But I don't like the culture that goes along with it. And I think the beards are important part of the beer because you always have some of that primal response to it.
It's weird because you could pick out a guy in a bar and if he has a beard and a flannel shirt on, most of the time you're like, there's my people.
That's right. Yeah, it's become very easy to spot other craft beer drinkers. Yeah,
people come up to me and they're like, oh, you probably have a nice wood lathe and a wood shop in your house. I'm like, no, I don't, but I do love beer and comedy.
I'm not Ron Swanson, but I.
That was a great book, by the way. He had a book, Row Your Own Canoe or Build Your
Own. Nick Offerman, yeah.
Very interesting book. But anyway, thanks for coming on, man. I think you got a really interesting. It's very different hearing the bringing in the people who are trying to get there and almost helping them along rather than. I did it, you figured out in your own kind of attitude, That's very interesting, and I really, really respect that.
I appreciate that. I really do.
I'm about to send you a beer.
Yeah, no, please do. We're happy to try it. Where we do a lot of work is through the, we do a lot of work online through some of the different websites that where people trade ideas. Really what we look for is just people who love it and that are involved in it, involved in the community, and that's what we want to really help foster. And it's been great, and the response we had has been great. But the better outlets we have to bring people in, it's really fantastic.
So if someone wants to check out your beer, where should they go?
So in New Jersey, we're all over. We're in a lot of the ShopRites. We're in a lot of the Bottle Kings. But we're in a lot in North Jersey. We're working our way steadily south. Hunterdon County is pretty much as far south as we'll go. You'll find us around here and there. But we're still working on it, and hopefully in the next year or so we'll be.
What about a website?
I apologize. Yeah. So our website is www.3beardsbeer.com. It's the number three. Yeah, so it's 3beardsbeer.com.
Check them out. If you brew beer, this might be an outlet for you, to maybe take that next step. But thanks again for coming on. It was great, man. Great talking to you. And I'm probably going to head back to try the third one.
Please do. We're happy to pour as much as possible.
Yes. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
This is the best beer in the world.
Another brewer on the podcast. This one I'm excited about because I've been drinking them a lot lately.
I'm excited too.
Are you?
Yeah.
I am joined by Steve Von Grimm of Clown Shoes Brewery.
Yeah, how's it going, guys?
Yes. Now, Steve is not only part of a brewery that I really like, he also has a really great look. He's got a captain's hat on right now.
Part of the uniform.
He's got sweet tats. He's got a great clown shoes hoodie on, sweet piercings, and of course,
all true.
The theme of the day is a great beard. A great beard. But anyway, so Steve, what do you do for Clown Shoes? Are you the owner of the Clown Shoes, or are you the owner of the Clown Shoes?
Owner of the Clown Shoes. Not yet. I'm not the owner yet.
Yes.
No, I'm one of their brewers, and I'm also their NJ representative. So I'm in New Jersey more than I'm up in Massachusetts. So when I'm up there, I brew what's on schedule, and when I'm down here in Jersey, I'm doing stuff like events. I'm going around the beer bars, talking to people about our beer.
So Clown Shoes is based at
Massachusetts, Ipswich.
Ipswich.
Yep. We're brewed out of Mercury Brewing. So they're nice enough to our brewmaster up there is Dave Ipke. So they produce our beer along with maybe three other beers and I believe a soda company.
Nice. So you work for Clown Shoes.
I do.
Now, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, I have seen Clown Shoes everywhere.
Kaboom!
Like a blast. Like,
right.
All of a sudden, I see them in every like decent liquor store I go to. Big fan of the Clementine IPA. So why all of a sudden do I see Clown Shoes everywhere?
We've been in New Jersey since last February, and if you've been seeing us everywhere, I really have to attribute that to our distributor up in North Jersey, which is Peerless. We're available in Central Jersey through Short Points and South Jersey through Kramer.
Okay, so now, was that like a specific marketing plan, or is it just the growing of the beer? Because it's a quality beer.
I can't argue with that. I do also, yeah, I agree. We are a great beer. If we are everywhere, I think craft beer speaks for itself. Companies that make a good beer are going to thrive. Whereas companies that make a poor product are just going to kind of fall by the wayside. I stand by Clown Shoes. It's a great beer. Can't argue with that. So the more markets we get into, I think that just speaks for the quality that we're putting out.
Now, Clown Shoes, where the hell did the name come from?
So we've been around for 5 years. January is going to be 5 years that we've been in business. 5 years ago, there was a radio contest in Boston where you call up, you name a beer. And the owner, Greg, called up and offered up Clown Shoes. Actually, I think the name of the beer that he offered was Wrath of Pecans. And at the end of the day, it didn't even place in the top five. So he got frustrated, annoyed, won about $8,000 in gambling, and opened up his own brewery under the pretense of like, well, I'm going to name the brewery whatever I want. The name's not going to matter as long as I have good beer to back that up.
Interesting. So he basically opened the brewery, one out of interest, and spite.
Spite, yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty great.
Spite.
Why do you have the greatest beer in the world? Because I hate those radio station people.
So you're a brewer.
A brewer.
A brewer. Now, how did you get into it?
I started out home brewing.
Like
at home.
We talked to.
And then got picked up by Clown Shoes a year ago. Really, when Clown Shoes got introduced to Jersey last February. And it was kind of seemed like an easy transition. It's just, instead of 5 gallons at a time, I'm doing 3,000 gallons at a time.
That's awesome.
So it's just math. It's just multiplying those ingredients.
Right. Now, like, I'm a home brewer. I talked to many of the brewers tonight. Basically started like everyone. The Mr. Beer kit to a partial grain to an all grain to now I have shit all over my house and two kegs in the fridge. And, where do you take that next step? Like, hey, I'm brewing now. Now I want to do this professionally. Like, I want to do this as a career. Where does that come into your life?
I think it's consistency in your product. I applaud anybody that wants to go from home brewing to putting their name out there, putting their product out there, to try and share that with the greater public. I think it's consistency in your product as far as you get like three solid beers under your belt, be able to make that consistently all the time.
Right, the same. Like, if I order this, I know I'm getting this.
The same product. And then have a lot of money.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's why the Scott Brennan Brewery is still in the basement.
Still under construction right now.
There's a separate movement that's going along with craft brewery that is the nano brew movement,
right,
where it's guys that are very small scale, but they produce 1 or 2 billion barrels a year, and they sell it very locally. That's how, like, everybody talks about Heady Topper up in Vermont.
Great.
Right.
I love it.
Great beer. It's one guy that brews it in his shed out of his house, and people go crazy about it.
The Alchemist, right?
Yeah, Alchemist. And it doesn't have... It has maybe a 15-mile distribution, but people travel out of state to get to that beer.
I had a buddy's dad of mine brought it back for me. He was like, oh, I got your bottle. I'm like, a can of it.
Yeah, you can only get 1 4-pack.
Yep. It's amazing. It's amazing that, like, when something gets a following, like, yeah, it's a very good beer. Have I tasted beers like it? Of course. But, like, once you get that, like, I don't know, like, where there's this love for it, people come out just for it, you know, just taste it. It's like, the other day I was at a bar and Founders KBS is being tapped.
Yeah.
And that's a delicious beer. Have I tasted beers like that before? Yes, but there's something about the love of it and the, to me, it's more about the community, like standing next to a guy and talking about beer. It's much more fun than drinking the beer, to me. So, like, and I've asked every brewer here tonight, an event like this, a brew festival, it's got to be great not only for the company to have people try the beer, but also great just to get your product out and talk to people who like your beer or who have never tasted the beer ever in their life and get to try something different.
Yeah, I talk to people from both... both groups, where they've heard of the brewery, they've seen the beers, they've tried some beers. Your Peerless is real good about getting us beers that aren't normally available in store. Like tonight, I have our Undead Party Crasher and our Swagger, our Hoppy Red Lager. I get to talk to people who also have never heard of the beer and ask me, where is this beer available?
Right.
So I get it to, I get that beer to more people that are interested in drinking good craft beer.
So you have probably met all sorts of interesting people through.
Sure.
Like, to me, that's one of the, like, literally why I'm doing this right now, this podcast. I have met 20 new people tonight from all over Jersey, Massachusetts, whatever. Just talking to interesting people who have a love for it, an appreciation for it, and whether it's you're an artist or a musician or a comic, or it's just, this is their love, this is their art, and it's very, it's great to hear just different perspectives on it, how you got into it. And it's funny how similar everyone is. A lot of it starts with that homebrew kit, and then that tasted kind of good. Can I make the next one better, the next one better, the next one better?
Oh, yeah, my first couple of homebrews, like, looking back, absolutely awful.
I told a story maybe an hour back. I made 2 good homebrews. I was like, yeah, these are great. I'm the fucking king. And I was drinking Yard Spruce Ale at the time. And I was like, I want to make a spruce ale. I made it, and it came out literally tasting like evergreen gum. Like,
sure.
And it was the most atrocious beer I've ever had. And that part of you that you made it loves it like a child, but it's like a fucked up child. Like
right, you share that bottle with somebody. It's like, hey, I made this spruce ale.
It's not a top.
They sip it and they make that face, and you're like, oh, you realize, like, oh, that person's just being nice, tasting my homebrew.
And you realize when you have a good homebrew on tap, it's gone within a couple weeks or a month or two.
And that goes
when
back.
I still have bottles of this spruce beer. It's now 3 years.
I made one that I ended up calling Burnt Tire because, it
sounds so delicious.
It's right. Yeah, I have a bottle just for memory sake, for nostalgic purposes. It was, I tried making a gluten-free beer for a friend of mine out of just using sorghum.
Right.
Sorghum and rice. And Yeah, no, there was a bacterial infection that got into the keg, and then after the fact, like, bottled it, and, like, you're kind of in denial with those first couple bottles. Like, no, this could be saved. This can maybe be saved. But no, the unfortunate truth of it is, once a beer goes bad, it's bad.
Yeah. And, like, I don't know. I think some of that was also due to my, like, this is going to be so good and experimental, where I didn't learn the fundamentals first, you know, like how to build on flavor character instead of just saying, let's throw everything into something and see what comes out, you know?
But, I was close.
So what's the future of Clown Shoes right now? What's on the horizon? What are they trying to do? Expand distribution or...
We are, as far as distribution, as far as our availability goes, we're available all throughout the country. The future of the brewery is just continuing to make good beer that is goes a little bit against the grain. Like, you know, we have a Bavarian IPA out in a season where a lot of people are making stouts. During the summer, we have two barley wines. We're just making good beer. We're making the beer that we want. January, we have our 5th anniversary quad, the piece that money can't buy. February, we have a Jersey exclusive called Garden State Rhapsody, which is an imperial stout in rye whiskey barrels. Also, we have a Saison, which is our first Saison, coming out in February called Date Night. It's making beer that we want that is going to appeal to a crowd that is going to search us out.
Last question I asked the last two guys. Why do guys who love beer have great beards?
I think it just goes one and the same. I mean, if you're a brewer, you have to have a beard.
I think so.
Yeah, that's just how it goes.
So the first guy, he didn't have an answer for it. The second guy said a similar answer to you, and
we're still
trying to find this mystery out.
Yeah, it's part of the mantle of being a brewer. Like, you have to have a beard. Goes back to just being part of that uniform.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. I don't know. I guess it's just, like, there's a reason that you can be in a spot, a bar, and look across and brews beer.
Yeah.
All right, so if we want to check out Clown Shoes, where should we go? Clownshoes.com? What?
Clownshoesbeer.com.
Clownshoesbeer.com.
That's our website. Beer menus, that's how I keep track of anybody, any new markets, anywhere our beer is available.
All right. So I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. It was a great little interview here, and enjoy the rest of the festival. We got an hour and a half left. I'm going to be over there a few times in the next hour.
Thanks, guys.
A beer fest, huh?
Well, how could I be remiss without having my two biggest alcoholic friends on the show? Mr. Mike Camacho, he's been on one podcast that never saw the light of day because we were all insanely wasted. And I listened to it back, and it was literally like...
Yeah, it got pretty emotional, if I remember.
It got emotional. It got weird. And I told Mike, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to put that. And he's like, man!
And I got upset.
I'm like, dude, we'll do that another time. So it turns out we're at the Big Brew Festival here, obviously. We've been broadcasting for the last almost 3 hours, having different people on. So, Mike, welcome aboard here.
Hey, thanks.
And then my other friend, who all the early episodes you pretty much heard him on, and he is the designer of the awesome Seattle Sonics, Seattle Supersonics / Verbal Shenanigans logo, Mr. Taryn Charapatra in the house. So you guys are going to share this condenser mic here because the other mics literally can't pick up sound and this much noise at this point. So you guys, you came down to the beer festival. We are going to hang out within Let's see. We got an hour and a half left of the beer festival. A lot of good beers here, man.
A lot of good beers.
A lot of good space to move around. It's just a very happy kind of environment around here.
Yeah, not as many sweaty armpits at this one, you know. A lot of beer fests have those.
Yeah, that's the problem with some beer fests. You never know. It's always a gamble. It's always a gamble. Like, yeah, this sounds great, but then there's 300 people trying to get one beer. And those become very, like, this kind of sucks. I want to go home.
Yeah, sometimes when you're in an environment that's sort of, like, curated for you, you kind of feel like you're not getting your money's worth because there's so many people with the same idea. You really can't even get to what you're after. So, like, I've been to a bunch of food truck festivals, and those kind of suck because basically you walk around, you get to a food truck, and you get your shit, and then you eat some one thing, and usually it costs, like, $8, and you're like, okay, well, if I went to McDonald's, I would have had an extra value meal.
You would bring up the value of a fast food restaurant.
I'm trying to think of what episode it was, but it was called Fast Food Expert. That was Taryn talking about his love of fast
Taryn
food.
Taryn and Juan, probably, right?
If I went to Wendy's, I would have been like, yo, junior bacon cheeseburger, a baked potato, 5-piece nuggets, another junior bacon cheeseburger, another sandwich.
I mean, you're right.
And that's like 6 food trucks worth of shit. Meanwhile, I come to a food truck festival, they're like, here, we got this fancy-ass fried chicken. Well, okay, cool, I'll get it. How much is it? $7. $7, but you're asking me that for $7 from your fucking truck right now. You're in a truck.
You're very angry about this, that everything doesn't cost Wendy's prices.
No, it's not about Wendy's prices. It's about the quality, or the value. It's about the fact that Wendy's is cooked in a kitchen, and this fried chicken is cooked in a truck. And meanwhile, I pay, you know, sevenfold.
I never knew how much you hated these food trucks.
No, I don't hate food trucks.
This is a new thing.
No, I still patronize food trucks. In fact, they kind of set off like a little bit of a thing because looking outside these food trucks right now, I'm kind of like, all right, I'm going to get some food later. And it's
coming
from one of them trucks.
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking about these trucks.
My food from tonight will come from a truck. So.
What do they have over there? Do you know?
Yes, there's a
pizza.
The empanada guy. There is the waffle de lis. There's a whole bunch of them. There's 7 food trucks on the here. Nice. Oink and Moo.
Oh, I saw that.
I've seen
them in Jersey City before, actually.
Yeah.
Really?
Supposedly all very good. I just tried the pizza from there that Berlo brought over. Damn good.
Yeah, I gotta get some of that pizza.
I've been drinking with you guys now for approximately...
This is before we were...
15 years, possibly.
Yeah. So to put that in perspective, that makes it 5 years of underage drinking and, you know, the rest, I guess, 10 years of...
6 years.
Illegal drinking.
Here's a question I was saving for you guys. What was the... Now, I'll tell you personally. When I started drinking, I didn't even drink beer. I drank... It's embarrassing, but I remember I got
Penny.
Smirnoff Ice from Keith Nelson's brother.
Jungle Juice.
My buddy Keith. And I was like, this is great. And I remember specifically watching the Devils in the playoff, drinking Smirnoff Ice, and we were with 2 girls. No names, needless to say.
Awesome.
And they were drinking beer, and we're like, ew, man, ew, ew.
Wow.
Ew.
Role reversal.
And they were drinking. But then my first beer of choice, like when I could actually get beer, was Miller. It was MGD.
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 Yeah.
We actually recently talked about
this. We were talking about that on the way here.
On the long-ass drive over here, we were talking about how we hope there's a bunch of stouts there. We hope there's a bunch of porters there. We hope there's a bunch of quads there and a bunch of triples. And then we're like, listen to this snobby-ass shit.
Very specific choices.
We're specifically requesting that we hope is at this beer festival. And then we're like, we used to come from drinking underage MGD and shit.
And we were happy to get that.
In retrospect.
In college, for me, it was Busch Light because it was $10.99
30 pack.
Yeah.
So someone would go pick it up, and that's what there was to drink.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, what I am learning, like, when I was living at home, and even like the first year in my house when I had some money, I was drinking every day like something really, really good. And now I'm learning, like, that shit's expensive. When you want to have like a couple beers per night or whatever, beer gets very expensive, man.
Yeah, it's a shame that we're at that age now where we got to think about the future. Yeah. And you can't just go to the store and just, who cares, you know, yeah, throw down your credit card and all that. Because I still want to do it, that's for sure.
And I need to fill my 401k.
I still occasionally splurge on like the real good beers, but yeah. There was a while there I would stop at the liquor store right by my school all the time,
yeah,
and just pick up everything that looked good.
Stop at the liquor store by my school.
Yeah. Right after my shift at the
school. Right after I got out of school, I stopped at the liquor store by my school.
But now it's like, you know, maybe keep a 12-pack of Yingling and then get a 6-pack of something good, you know, like...
I hear you completely.
It's kind of depressing.
I actually barely even drink during the week anymore.
I know.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I know.
But when the weekend comes, I'm so thrilled. I'm like, oh, shit. Now I can splurge on a 6-pack, which is really sad. Because it used to be a 6-pack and a big bottle all the time.
Every night.
What's the most embarrassing thing you've ever done drunk?
Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, I've broken bones drunk.
Broken bones, but like that only embarrassed you to yourself, kind of, because you were alone. You left my house drunk.
Yeah, randomly. Nobody
knew.
And
you ran home and fell off a curb.
Woke up with a shattered arm, yeah.
I got a funny story. I'll open this up.
Okay.
Well, there's two stories. One, when I was in high school, I was drinking SoCo. And I get, to this day, I hear SoCo, I'm like, ooh. I was at this guy's house, and I didn't know anything. I was taking solo cups and drinking SoCo at, like, full glasses of SoCo.
This is one of those day rave stories, isn't it?
No.
That's how we met.
I woke up on a coffee table with my shirt off, and... apparently, I left all these voicemails on my buddy Adam's, you know.
Oh, Adam Baczynski.
No, not him.
Adam
Mertz. And he played them back, and I was like...
Names have to be bleeped out.
I was like, hey, like puking on the coffee table. Woke up.
A puking sure. voicemail.
Yeah. But there was like three of them in a row. Like I guess I really
three puking voicemails.
I guess I really
hang on.
I guess I really wanted to talk to him that night. The second one, it's not even embarrassing, but insanely dangerous. About a year ago, I got loaded at my house by myself. You know, Julie was around, and there was a satellite dish still on the roof of my house. It has no use.
A non-functional satellite dish.
So I got the bright idea that I wanted to remove the satellite dish.
It was bothering you.
And put it in my scrap pile to take it to the scrapyard. So I, in a probably a blood alcohol content of like 4.0, got on the roof of my house, couldn't do it. I went up there with a screwdriver, couldn't do it. So I was hanging on the satellite dish on my sloped roof, mind you, just trying to pull it down. And I tore it down and fell and tumbled literally maybe like 2 feet away from the edge of the house with the satellite in my hand. And I come down the stairs. To my wife and her friend at the time, and I'm like, I got the satellite dish, and they're like, where'd how'd you get that? They're like, were you just on the fucking roof? And I was swing, like, imagine my neighbors like pulling up from like dinner and seeing me swinging from the satellite dish, like, woo-hoo!
I think your neighbors probably expect that from you at this point.
Take that dish, TV.
You're lucky your neighbors aren't as racist as you. Otherwise,
you've had enough parties there where they kind of expect some kind of mayhem, I think. Yeah.
So those are two bad stories for myself. Anybody else want to share?
I will. I'm going to go grab another beer. Who needs beer?
Oh, I will.
I will, but you got to. You have to leave.
I don't have one. About to make a story.
Mike, you got plenty.
I have, yeah, I mean, I guess I do have a lot, but, yeah, if you could, just anything, whatever.
Whatever.
One that, One that comes to mind for some reason right now is I actually went and I did the slip and slide while drunk.
Yes, yes, yes.
In my boxers, like straight up in my boxers. Uh-huh. And I remember it destroyed my phone because it got soaked and, you know, water damage, obviously. Not insured. They don't fix that kind of thing, whatever.
They're like, sir, did you go on a slip and slide half naked?
How did you know? They could just tell by the watermarks on the phone. But I remember waking up the next day and my phone was totally destroyed. And I remember my girlfriend at the time totally ripping me up because of it. I remember her specifically saying, how are we going to talk now? I remember thinking that was so insane. I'm like, I had a blast last night. I was slip and slide. Like, I don't care if we talk.
One of my favorites of yours is when you and your brother, there was a barbecue at your house.
Oh, yeah. And, I know where you're going with this.
And you had plastic patio furniture at the time. And you and your brother just decided that the furniture can no longer exist on this earth. And the two of you were elbow dropping and ripping apart plastic furniture for like 15 minutes
flinging
straight.
Flinging them across the yard,
yeah,
I remember.
Killing them. And like everyone was just like watching like a gladiator fight. Like, oh, this is awesome.
Well, we were having a party. We had to entertain, you know?
I guess that was the entertainment. So, yeah, Mike also broke his arm. We were sitting in the backyard having a fire. He said, okay. Well, actually, you didn't say okay.
I didn't say anything.
He randomly left. Next morning, he says, yeah. I said, where'd you go? He said, well, I left, and I also broke my arm. He fell off a curb.
I was running home, I remember. I randomly got up. Because during that period of time, I would go on autopilot mode, like, pretty consistently. Another time I walked home from Shannon Rose, I remember, in Woodbridge. Just randomly left. And I think, actually, both of these times were when me and Jackie, my wife now, we were broken up at the time. So it was a pretty emotional situation. And she was there both of those times, I remember. And I guess I couldn't handle it. So I got up, and I'm like, I'm out of here. In my mind, didn't tell anybody. But yeah, I was running home from Scott's house, and he lived like two blocks from me at the time, very close. And I fell on the ground. I remember rolling over my arm, and I just got up and just kept going like nothing happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Got home, went to bed, woke up in the morning shrieking in pain. Horrible pain. I was so intoxicated, I had no idea I had shattered my arm. Yeah. But woke up in the morning, and I was like, Mom, I gotta go to the hospital. And we went to the hospital, and yeah, I had a broken arm for a while.
So, Taryn and Berlu, one of you, drunk story. Something embarrassing you did.
It's you first, man.
Me go first? Okay. I think back, I remember I was at a party with a friend, and I told him the story of the worst strip club I was ever at. And basically, the story of the strip club, it was across the street from, like, a Girl Scouts. And I,
this sounds like a great strip club.
No, believe me, it wasn't. It was such a cheap place. They didn't have a DJ, so when the girl's dancing and the song ends, she had to stop dancing and go over and change the music to the next song.
Nice.
And I was just like, all right, whatever. I'm in the backwoods, so be it. But then, like, she smiled, and the girl clearly smoked meth because all her front teeth were just half-ass brown and stuff like that.
And where was this?
It's like a half an hour away. I'm gonna have to Google that shit to figure it out.
Was it in New Jersey?
Yeah, definitely in New Jersey. You know, it was like in the backwoods. I know it was like
by Raceway Park.
Yeah,
it was 30 minutes from New Egypt.
Oh, Raceway Park.
But anyway, well, I was at a friend's party and we're all plastered beyond belief. I tell him the story, and then just one of them goes, "Fuck it, we're going there." So we're all hammered off belief and all. I could barely keep my head up. Like, I literally had to grab my hair to lift up to look at girls. And I went to the bathroom, and I just didn't make it in time, so I just splattered all over the floor of the bathroom.
Number one or number two?
I guess three when it comes out of the mouth. Not the Doug Max three, but... So I'm sitting there. I'm a nice guy. I'm like, well, I can't leave it like this, so I start pulling the paper towels, but I'm so drunk I can't pull the paper towels off the towel rack, so I literally pick up all the vomit still attached
still attached to the paper towel, and I threw it in the sink because I wanted to be helpful.
I think you win.
All right, Mr. Charbacha, I know you've got like 300.
Oh my God, what is it? What is it?
Or stories that we've all witnessed.
Think of your best one.
I can think of a couple. One of them that comes to mind is.
Yeah, get your mouth all up on that.
Yeah. One of that comes to mind is being out on a date, like very, very late at in the city. Went out after work, whatever. Met somebody for the first time. Met this girl for the first time, and went out, whatever. And it was cool. So there was discussion for like a good amount of time, and whatever. Things led to etc. Went out and had a fling, so to speak, right? So, but this was on a weekday night. Usually this kind of shit doesn't happen to me. So on a weekday night, within all that drunkenness, ended up doing this whole thing. And then on the way back, basically, I went out until about 4 in the morning, as is normal in New York standard. Whatever.
I feel like that's when you go out. Like, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, you're partying pretty hard. You leave at 4. Say you go out and you head back and whatever, and you're back at like 5 or 6 or whatever, depending on where you're going. And then by the time it's all said and done, you're looking at like 7, 8 a.m. So by 7 or 8 a.m., I was like, oh, God, it's 7 or 8 a.m. I got work tomorrow.
Can't even imagine doing that anymore.
I was very, very disgusting. Just had not slept. Had not done anything, had just been drunk the whole night, all night, doing whatever kind of weird recluse shit, and I managed to get back to work in the same exact clothing that I had drank in at work the night before. And this on a Friday, which Friday typically is you go out, like, you know, sometimes you work at small places or whatever, they're very, very, like, aggressive about you going out to drink on a Friday because they're like, look, yo, you gotta come out. You gotta come out tonight. You fucking gotta come out tonight. So, like, they'll get really aggressive. So, made my way back to work on Friday. Worked the whole day through with the exact same shit on as the previous day. All the stains from the previous night and all the same shit. Unshowered, unhaircutted, anything, everything.
Did you continue the party after?
I continued the party after that, so Friday night was a fun night as well, but...
I don't know. I feel like you got way worse in the chamber than that.
Oh, I've got way worse in the chamber. There's a couple on there. I can't, like, bring too many to mind, but...
Too bad my brother's not here.
Yeah, he's got some.
Shit.
I mean, you know, done a lot of weird shit while I'm drunk. When you're drunk, you realize how weird you actually are.
Yeah. So,
It rubs the lotion on its skin.
You go to the liquor store these days, and what's the beer you're looking for? What's the beer? That's your go-to beer at this point in your life.
There's a damn lot of them. I mean,
I don't know if I have a go-to beer, really, to be honest with you. I still look and survey and see what they have and what I'm in the mood for, but... I have noticed that I've been disappointed lately. Like, I've been looking around, and I'm kind of like, had that, don't really want that. You know, I'm like that kind of guy now. And then at the same note, there's a lot of stuff popping up I haven't seen, which is cool, but it's a little out of my price range.
So I think we've had this discussion.
$9.99?
Yeah, $9.99 for one bottle?
How, like, the price for Mad Dog 2020 has gone up so much. It's unbelievable. Kiwi Mad Dog 2020 has been a standby of mine for years.
I don't even look in its direction anymore.
And fucking Mad Dog 2020 is even expensive these days. What happened?
I don't know.
They don't make craft Mad Dog.
Not really. It's something I've been drinking a lot just because the liquor store by the street. I always get the Redfish by Flying Fish.
Yeah, it's great.
It's a very good one.
It's, you know, just like a nice red rye IPA or whatever it is. And
yeah.
Great beer.
I really don't have a go-to. I always get
not like
different.
A pure go-to, but it's just what's available up the street. And I'm always... I do the same thing. I wander around. But if I'm like, oh, I got to get a quick six-pack, that's kind of been the go-to lately.
I have Witty's right down the street from me. Right. Witty's has come leaps and bounds from what it used to
so
be.
We're, so we're all Jersey people here, right?
Yeah.
Jersey
yeah.
people?
Yeah.
So Jersey people, I think it's like we have a really lucky streak with beer.
Yeah,
East Coast, East Coast beer, especially New York, New Jersey. Boston is pretty good. Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania's killing it as well. East Coast, yeah. New England beer is killer. Like, everything is good.
Yeah, we're lucky enough to have that kind
you of... You have your Northern California. Northern California beer is really good. Colorado beer is amazing.
Vermont.
But, you know,
Colorado.
Yeah, Vermont. You, I mean, but you look at the United States has the best fucking beer.
By far.
I guess if I want to say, like, Dale's Pale Ale.
Great
like,
one.
That's a great beer.
Absolutely.
Like, drink that all the time, man. It's great. Get a 12-pack of it, but...
Just, not to mention Flying Fish again, but Exit 16...
I that's just told the guy from Flying Fish that's my favorite one by far.
It's delicious, yeah.
And it's so awesomely... A six-pack will do you...
Oh, God, forget it.
Through the roof.
You go to another dimension drinking that.
All right. On that note, I'm going to stop the podcast. Thank you guys for coming on because we're going to go drink some beer now.
Let's drink beer.
All right.
That sounds great.
All right, another guest on this beautiful this brew fest that is guest after guest after guest is awesome. We're joined by Mike Moran from Doc's Draft Hard Cider. Welcome, Mike. First
Thank
off,
you.
To
Thanks
the Verbal
me.
Shenanigans podcast. So, you guys obviously stick out. Any cider company is always kind of like a niche kind of thing,
yeah,
but.
Yeah.
What is it about Doc's that you? I've known you guys for a long time now.
Thank you.
What is it that about cider? Like, you guys are cider brewers, or I guess I don't even know if brewers is the right
makers.
Yeah, cider makers.
Yeah.
So cider is like a thing that everyone always kind of forgets, but
yeah,
nowadays
yeah.
like there's commercial ciders.
Exactly. Yeah.
But Doc's has been around for quite a while now.
Yep.
So how long has Doc's been around?
We started making cider in the early 90s, I think around like 93. We started off with just the
so
original
20
apple.
Years, basically.
Yeah, we've been making it for a long time.
Yeah. You guys are a cider, but you're by the winery, right?
Well, yeah, it's the winery is where
whole,
we produce. Yeah, yeah.
The
which
whole,
is
the
a lot
Warwick
of
Warwick
yeah.
winery. Right?
Yep, that's the Warwick Valley Winery.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, do you actually brew the cider?
No. I don't. I handle all the New Jersey. I'm the New Jersey brand manager, so all the New Jersey events and tastings and samplings and sales and all that stuff. I handle all that stuff.
So what is it about cider that makes it interesting for people? Like to me, it was really refreshing to have this.
Yeah.
It was a cranberry.
Yeah, the spiced cranberry. Yeah.
Spiced
yeah.
cranberry. It's delicious.
Thank you. Yeah.
And
I had the pear.
Yeah. The pear. Delicious, and it's like it's really nice to have between beers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But,
exactly.
Do you have like cider enthusiasts that like come? And,
yeah. I mean, a lot of people really like our cider because we brew traditional like old world French ciders, craft cider. You know, it's. We grow all the apples up at our, you know, with the winery and the black dirt, and you know, we produce everything. Everything's local. All the fruits we use are local, and you know, there's no added nonsense to our cider. There's no added sulfites or sugars. It's just we kind of let the apples kind of speak for themselves. And yeah, exactly, you know, it's like we believe in what we make, and our fruits kind of speak for themselves when you have our ciders, you know. And you know, it's a niche market for a lot of people because a lot of people are either gluten free or looking to avoid, you know, gluten and. You know, it's kind of hard to find really good craft ciders. We like to think, you know, we make some really awesome stuff.
You guys do great stuff. I've seen you. I went to a beer fest up in. It was up in upstate New York somewhere. I don't. It was by. It was by. Kind of near Omegang, where Omegang is.
Oh, like Cooperstown? Like that
yeah,
area?
Yeah.
There, yeah.
You guys are there. I've been
nice.
To your place.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've seen you all over the place. But you stick to that cider. We are a cider company straight up, right?
Well, we make wine. We produce a bunch of really nice wines as well.
Right.
We do bourbon, gin.
Really?
Yeah, liqueurs.
I didn't know you guys do hard stuff.
The spirits we just started making, well, not recently, about I think 2001, 2002, we started really producing a lot more. We just got a new still, so we're producing a lot more bourbon and gin, and the bourbon's really phenomenal. It's just straight 3-year bourbon that we age in new charred oak, and it's all with locally grown black dark corn and everything. So,
do you you guys do like an applejack?
Yep, we do an applejack.
I can see that working perfectly.
Yeah, that
for
stuff
what you
is
do.
Really, really awesome. That's been really picking up, and it makes some awesome Manhattans with that applejack. It's really, really nice.
I want one of those now. But so, like, as a cider company, how do you try to stand out? Like, now you have things like you've always had Strongbow.
Yeah.
You've always had Magnums. Mm. But now, like, Apple, what is it called? Apple Red.
Angry Orange. Yeah, that's what I say.
So those are starting to those are starting to pop up. But I guess, in a way, it's probably doesn't even affect your business because you're more of, like, I want that real cider.
The
underground.
Yeah, that craft, you know, small, like, we actually, you know, like traditional cider methods of, like, you know, like, you know, it's not no added sugar. It's still, you know, has that fresh fruit kind of sweetness, but it's not super sweet. You know, we want to make craft cider, you know, not just mass produced apple juice, you know, it's like.
So how did you start working for Doc's?
I was actually, I was a beer manager for a long time, and I was always a fan of Warwick Valley. I loved all their stuff, and they were looking for someone to kind of really expand the market in New Jersey for them. And, you know, the owners, all super nice people up there, and, you know, it just kind of worked out. I was looking to kind of move up in the business and move out in the industry, and we needed someone to do that to cover New Jersey, and it kind of just worked out.
I mean, working in both the beer and the cider, but what do you feel is the biggest difference in, like, selling the two?
I think it's tough because, like, cider's picking up now, and it's starting this year especially. Beer in the past, like, I would say 3 or 4 years has really starting to grow. So I think cider's actually, it's a great time for cider right now because it's starting to catch up with beer now. Like, beer's huge, you know, everyone's into craft beer. But now, like, once craft cider starts to kind of really pick up and start to get out there, I think people will see that, you know, Doc stands out for, you know, a lot of those reasons.
Do you find it hard to find a target audience with the beer groups, or do you find that they're people are, like, willing to give, like, a chance?
I mean, sometimes, like, a lot of, like, I'm over there, like, I'll be at the table, and people are like, oh, no, I'm here for the beer, and I'm like, oh, you should give us a try, like, I don't like cider, and I'm like, well, we don't really make kind of the same cider as everyone else, like, ours kind of stands out.
Shop right now.
Yeah, exactly, then when people have it, you know, they're like, oh, man, I don't even really like cider, but this is awesome. So, you know, they enjoy it for that reason, because it stands out, and it really, you know, it's a true cider, you know.
So, are you involved at all in the brewing process?
No.
Keep saying brewing, but...
Well, I mean, we still have to master the apples, and it still ferments, so, I mean, it's, you know, brewing's not, like, you know, I wouldn't say the wrong term to use.
Right.
Or, you know, but, no, I don't, I'm not involved at all, yeah.
So, what's on the horizon for Doc's Draft Cider? Like, where do they want to go? Do they want to stick to what they're doing, or do they want to keep growing?
I mean, I think we want to really keep growing. I mean, you know, we've really been growing a lot in northern New Jersey, and, you know, New York knows us because we're local to New York and upstate New York, but I think we're starting to really spread out into New Jersey and kind of get out there and get our name out there. And again, with the whole cider boom that's happening right now, I think that's really what we're trying to work with, and people are starting to recognize our name, and it's nice, you know.
Yeah, and the place itself is beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
The place itself is phenomenal, like, to take a date out to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, go hang out for the day. Yeah.
So, a festival, like, I've asked every person that came on today, a festival like this, Sussex County kind of thing, what does it do for, like, is it a hassle, or is it I love this, I love talking to people, I love people that would, especially for you, it's gonna be like, people normally, they're here for beer, but, hey, I'll try that cider.
Yeah.
Like, is it a great thing for the company just to be out there and get people to taste it and say, hey, where are you from? Hand a business card out. Maybe I'll come visit, drive by.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to meet people from all over the world.
Definitely.
Just doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, this is. I love doing these things. Like, I love doing festivals. They're so much fun. Like, I meet a lot of really awesome people, and I meet other people in the industry, and it really gets people to try our stuff that may not have tried it anywhere else, because you know, it's like people may come here for beer and then wind up leaving Loving Docks and never have thought they would have tried it, you know, at any other point. But because they're at a beer festival, they're like, oh, I'll try it. It's, why not? The guy's got it open. They're like, wow. And it like kind of really, it kind of gets people to break out of their box a little bit and try other stuff, you know.
Now, are you a brewer yourself at all?
Or? I am. Yeah, I'm a pretty, well, semi-avid home brewer, I guess.
Yep, yep. See, every person on the podcast, me too. That's kind of why I wanted to come here.
Yeah, yeah.
Beer is a big passion of mine.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, you're a beer brewer,
mm-hmm.
but do you ever bring your brews into the place?
I haven't brewed anything super recently. I brewed something with a friend a couple weeks ago, and it's actually just about fermented in the bottle now. So I'm gonna grab a bottle of that and bring it up there, and you know, kind of pass it out and get some professional feedback. And yeah. You know, because it's, you know, that's the best thing about brewing is having people try your stuff and getting your feedback, and that's why I love, you know, pushing docs and getting people to try it, because you know, just getting people's feedback in general is just, you know, just worth coming out here.
Now, if someone wanted to try to find more information on Docs, where would they go?
They can go. We have a Facebook page, Warwick Valley Winery, Docs Draft Cider on Facebook, American Fruits. That's what we distill with our liqueurs. Come out to the winery, Little York Road in Warwick Valley, New York, 11 to 6 every day.
Let me put my personal touch on this. If you got a girl that you want to take a date on, that is the place to go,
yeah,
man. It's freaking absolutely gorgeous. It's just a really cool, low key kind of place. It's not, you hear Warwick, New York, like where the hell is it? It's not far.
Yeah.
Not far at all. Beautiful place to take someone. And, you guys serve food over there too?
Yeah, we have a cafe. We have, you know, serve food, and we have bands play on the weekends, and in the summer we have a bunch of festivals.
What about stand up comedy night?
You know, I've
you
I've
should
thought
do
about
it, man.
It. Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be pretty fun. You know, I think that'd be pretty.
People would
pretty
come.
Cool. I think so. Yeah, I'll see. I'll pass the word around. We'll see.
I love how I put pressure on my guests at the end. They're like,
yeah, all right,
we'll do it. I'll ask my boss. You know, like. But it was a joy having you on, man.
Thank you, man.
Enjoy the rest of the festival.
I definitely will.
There's about an hour left, I think.
I hope. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Whoa, 50 minutes.
There we go.
50 minutes left. Yes. But it's a pleasure having you. It's nice talking to someone who's different than brewer.
Yeah,
we try
to do something a little different. So
yeah.
We thank you. Thanks for having us and having me on, man.
All right, thank you, man. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks.
All right, I had another random person join the podcast.
That's right.
A lovely lady. What's your name?
Sue. Hey, the one and only.
So when you say your name to people, you have to scream it like that and say, Sue, hey, in the house.
You know what? You gotta always have fun. And Sue, hey, that's just the first name. I can have more fun with the last name.
All right.
You tell me what you want to know.
My name to that.
I'm the one and only.
So what are you here for? You're a beer drinking girl?
I am a beer drinker. I am just an everything lover.
Wow.
If it gets me fucked up, I'm in.
You love everything.
Am I allowed to curse on this? Like,
yeah,
let's just.
You want.
Okay, thank God. All right, let's do this.
Go ahead.
All right, I'm
Go
doing
ahead.
It.
You tell us.
You do.
Yeah. Well, no, you tell me what I want to talk about.
Okay.
Right. You said you were some friends of some of the brewers are here today.
Yes,
talk
you guys have
that.
Had a couple of brewers that have been here that I have tried their beer. I have either loved it or not loved it, and I have given 101% of my opinion to.
Ooh, okay.
So. What's been your favorite beer so far?
Okay, well, here's the thing. You want to talk beer, you want to talk cider. My favorite cider, there is a Swedish cider company here tonight that is amazing. And there's a lot of ciders here tonight. And I have to say, this cider has stood out. They are imported from Sweden, and they're absolutely amazing. They had a strawberry and lime, and they were so good. And I honestly have not tried anything like it. They were called Coeur d'Alene Cider, and that's very hard to pronounce in English. Coeur d'Alene Cider. They are beautifully Swedish. That is their slogan. They had a strawberry and lime strawberry and lime cider, which is not really heard of. Have you ever had a strawberry and lime cider?
Only a strawberry one.
When you think cider, you don't really think crazy flavors. They have a strawberry lime. It's delicious. They had an apple and they had a pear. The pear pairs apparently very well with gin. And I had the pear by itself, and I could see that it was freaking delicious. It's imported. That was probably the best cider I had tonight. They had an apple. They had it warm. You can have it cold. And I was very impressed. I'm just saying, like, for a cider, you can have it very, very carbonated. You can have it not carbonated. You can have it cold. You can have it warm. And there's a lot of ciders here tonight. A lot of them are champagne-y. A lot of them are very beery. That was the best. That was my favorite, just because it was a very big surprise.
So, what about beer? What was your favorite beer here?
I might just keep on hanging.
I actually was really surprised. Armaganging, have you guys?
Armaganging, yes.
They're very good. Innocent Gun, they're oak aged. They almost have like a banana-y taste because of the oak aged barrels that their beers are brewed in.
Can you spell banana-y?
Banana. /Y. Banana.
Now, be honest with me. Banana's a hard word to spell, but that Gwen Stefani song really made it easy to spell. My shit is bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
See? Like, it's so easy after that. Like, that's how I teach my students how to spell it. But banana E.
Psychology. There's not a song out there for that kid. I'm sorry.
You just have to add a slash Y.
PSYCHOTIC.
Are we bringing Kanye into this?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
We're all about that.
Maybe.
No, the slash Y.
We were listening to Busta coming up here. And that's no joke.
Well, what kind of Busta songs were you listening to?
Well, my favorite new Busta song is the one with him and Eminem called Calm Down.
Is there really a new Busta song? Because I feel like he's so 1990s.
Well, I mean, you got to appreciate the good artist.
He's got skills. He doesn't use all that mixing and everything.
Well, okay, please, just lay it down for me. What kind of Busta song is good for you?
You tell us.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of thrown under the bus here. What kind
of
bus is
that? That's what we do.
I'm honestly, there was this beer that was very similar to Innocent Gun that was delicious, and that's kind of hard to do. No, I already talked about the strawberry and lime. Yeah. It honestly, like, if I'm going to put this on the line, I'm going to do it. It's called Strawberry and Lime Recordling. And I don't know how to spell that. I don't know how to pronounce that. It's very Swedish. It's imported, and it is delicious. And if
Which
you guys didn't
it?
Get to go over there yet, you really need to. There's
right.
a hot Swedish girl, and her beer tastes even better. It's a type of
All
cider.
Right.
It's delicious.
We're
going
to do a little spelling bee. Spell Recorderly.
I'm going to go with R-E.
Yes.
K-O-R.
Yes.
D-E-R.
Yes.
L-I-G.
Wow.
And that's
that
just,
is correct.
That's only because I'm kind of a genius, honestly. And also, the name was showing on the back of the card.
Damn it.
Oh.
You want to take a you want to take a little beer quiz?
Do I get to drink some beer while I take the quiz?
You can do whatever you want during it. Here we go. Michael Berlew's going to quiz.
Right.
All right.
Bring it.
All right. In the 15th century, in order to keep beer from spoiling, Bavarian brewers stored their beer where? Is it A, dungeons, B, wells, C, riverbeds, or D, caves?
I feel like dungeons and caves are both very strong answers.
Okay.
Can you just, like, define what a dungeon is?
A what?
A dungeon. What does
dungeon.
That entail? Is that, like, a cave? Because
well,
they're
the
same
like in
thing.
It's like in a castle where they
Am
store
right?
prisoners at.
It's where Berlew grew up.
Yeah. It was good times, you know, being chained up, you know?
So, C.
C. Riverbeds?
Yeah, why not? I mean, rivers are cold, right?
They are cold, but that's not where they put them. They put them in caves.
That's what I meant. C for caves.
O for one.
Oh,
O for one. Question number two.
Anheuser-Busch was founded in what year? A, 1837. B, 1852. C, 1894. D, 1911.
That's a lot of 1800s.
Well, there was one 1900 if you think it's that early.
Anheuser-Busch. They're the makers of Budweiser.
Correct.
Bud Light Lime. A lot of Bud products. What are the choices again?
A, 1837. B, 1852.
Okay.
C, 1894. D, 1911.
It's between 1894 and 1911.
Okay.
Well, that's a lot of years, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're kind of close.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go with 1894.
I'm afraid it's 1852.
All but, for two.
But that's really what I meant.
Okay, that's true. She didn't
all
mean
right.
that.
On to question number three.
Where is Yuengling headquartered?
Pennsylvania.
Let me... Is it A, Boston, Massachusetts?
Negative.
B, Pottsville, Pennsylvania?
Negative.
C, Easton, Pennsylvania? D, Egg Harbor Township, New Jersey?
Well, it's either B or C, because it's obviously in Pennsylvania. What was B and C again?
B was Pottsville, Pennsylvania, and C was Easton, Pennsylvania.
I'm going to go with B. C.
I'm afraid you said B first, and I'm afraid you're absolutely correct.
Oh, thank God.
One for three.
All right. What beer had a mascot that was a penguin who said doobie doobie doo? Was it A, Molson Ice, B, Pabst Ice, C, Labatt's Ice, or D, Bud Ice?
I'll go with C.
I'm afraid it's Bud Ice.
What?
Yeah,
that's kind of a shocker.
Doobie-doo.
That's kind of a shocker. Why would Bud ever go with penguins as their mascot?
Why wouldn't they?
I mean, I'm kind of shocked.
It was competition against Buzz McKenzie, I can only assume. They couldn't get a hippo.
That's correct.
Now, here's a question about a sad time. What amendment of the Constitution was prohibition? Is it the 18th Amendment, the 19th Amendment, the 20th Amendment, or the 21st Amendment?
Oh, that's a little bit tough. I honestly have no idea. Can you repeat the choices again?
You want me to repeat the choices as you look at your phone?
I mean, I just want you to repeat the choices.
Is it A, the 18th Amendment, B, the 19th, C, the 20th, D, the 21st?
And I have no idea.
What is Siri telling you right now?
Well, I don't have an iPhone, so Siri's telling me absolutely nothing. But is the 20th a choice?
The 20th was C.
Okay, so I'll go C.
You should have went A.
Oh, God.
Well, what was A?
The 18th.
I can tell you all about how beer tastes. I'm not a genius.
All right.
What does IPA stand for?
India Pale Ale.
Now, what is the history behind it?
Is there a history?
Oh, big
no.
Time.
Wait, actually, I would big love time. To hear this, so please tell me.
Well, when they were exporting goods from India to England,
okay.
Hops were used as a preservative.
Okay.
So the reason that IPAs have a very bitter taste is because of the hops.
Okay.
But back in the day, hops were used to help preserve beer. So it was during the Indian and English trade that they were called Indian Pale Ale. So it kept
That's
the beer fresh.
Very interesting.
Yes.
So during the Indian Trail.
No, not the Indian Trail. What is the Indian Trail?
I said Indian Trail.
Is that like the Oregon Trail? You died of dysentery.
So during the Indian Trail.
Yes. And the microphone works too.
Our ancestors have been alcoholics for as long as
yes.
Columbus sailed the
You ever see the special How Beer Changed the World?
I'm actually curious now. How did beer change the world?
Well, there's a lot of ways. Like the people who were making the pyramids
right.
and working in ancient Egypt were actually paid in alcohol because they were slaves.
They were paid in beer when they made the pyramids. The seven wonders of the world. When the pyramids were created, they were paid in beer.
They were trying to make a square, but they were so drunk it ended up like a pyramid.
I don't think so. I mean, the pyramids
that's a true
pretty
story.
Incredible. I mean, I don't care how drunk you are to be able to make something like the pyramids. I don't know how drunk you'd have to be.
20 minutes left for beer.
No way.
Yeah, let's go.
I need a little bit of fact behind that.
What does beer stand for?
Beer. B-E-E-R.
Yeah, I don't either. I made that question up.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good question.
I got a fun one here. Beer koozies are
beer.
What in Australia? Is it A, stubby holder, B, brew patches, C, brew blankets, or D, flagers?
I actually like brew blankets, even if that's not their name. I hope that C is the answer, because I'm going to call them brew blankets for the rest of my life.
You should call them stubby holders, because that's what they do.
Hey. Beers aren't stubbies.
God damn it. Listen to me.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for coming on the podcast.
You were quite entertaining.
You were very entertaining. I mean, not everyone knows their beer. It's okay.
That's all right.
But you did have a good perspective on the cider that you spelled.
I just had fun. That's all I'm saying.
That's all that matters. And here's your little regular.
That is the best cider. It's not even American, and that's absolutely okay. It's just delicious.
Sweet's got us in this.
Yo, when you swallow something, it should taste good. Am I right?
Words to live by.
Wow. You're right. You're right.
You're going to swallow.
That's why I eat pineapple.
Fucking sweet.
That's why I love
pineapple. Hi, everybody.
That's why I love pineapple.
Yo, there's absolutely nothing wrong with pineapple.
Nothing.
Pineapple and mint.
Amen.
That's why I eat them. Take care.
I mean, pineapple and mint together, maybe not, but pineapple and mint respectively.
Well, I figure one of the two will make it taste
yes.
good.
Yeah.
You know what? No, just to you.
I just chew gum while she's.
You guys are amazing.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Take care.
There's a lot of good beers here tonight.
Definitely.
And there's a lot of not good beers, but it's all about what you enjoy. It's all about just having fun. Ew, that's what I'm saying.
We're high-fiving again.
It's all about just
we're
fucking swallowing at the end of the day. Am I right?
That's
am I right?
It.
Live long and swallow on.
That's been my motto since freshman soccer.
I really enjoy your little big brew beer. I don't know what you're drinking, but it's tiny for your hands, and I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, well, you know what they say,
hands down.
Hands across the world, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who says that?
Heal the world.
Heal the world, make it a better place.
Yes.
My
thank you for having me.
Yes.
Thank you, dear. Thank you for stopping back. You were fun.
Good luck, man.
Thank you. Well,
another high five.
Oh.
Well, about it.
Well, that was interesting.
Hey, Scott, do you think she had some beer tonight?
We'll see if that makes the cut. On the other hand, this woman should have a lot of beer to be wearing those red tights.
Yeah. There was a lot of wool to make that happen.
Yeah.
I fear the sheep community was in exile afterwards.
I feel like I might get blasted in the eye by some nylon very soon. Yes! So we're getting to the end of the Big Brew Festival. We have about 30 minutes left, 35 minutes left. But we are joined by,
AJ Eckstein. AJ Eckstein of Boulevard Brewing Company.
Yes, I knew you were from Boulevard, but I didn't have your name, but from Boulevard Brewing Company. So where are you guys located, first off?
The brewery's based in Kansas City, Missouri.
Wow. Yeah. How the hell are you here?
It's New Jersey's one of our first expansion markets. The brewery has contained most of its business to the Midwest for the past 25 years, keeping a regionally and locally mindset about the company.
What made you pick New Jersey out of curiosity?
New Jersey was on the short list of expansion markets because it's kind of experiencing a golden age in craft beer right now, where the consumers, the retailers, may be a little bit behind New York City, a little bit behind Philadelphia, the two cities it's wedged between, and that's trickling down now where, yeah, it's IPAs, oh, please tell me more. Belgian style, please tell me more. So it's on the uptick, if you will.
It's funny you say that because the theme of, like, the whole night has been talking to New Jersey brewers and stuff like that and, you know, local breweries and how great the New Jersey beer scene has gotten. There's breweries popping up all over the place. It's a state where you got a melting pot of everyone, suburbanites, city people, rural people, who love craft beer. They love trying something different. And they were always the butt of jokes, you know, like, you got no beer there, blah, 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 blah. But now, I would challenge New York City especially. They have nothing there. They have like 3 craft breweries right now in the city. New York has a lot, but in the city, you know. So New Jersey always is living under the shoe of New York. But now there's these great breweries all over the place. We interviewed Angry Eric tonight, Bolero Snort, Flying Fish. I'm a big fan of Kane and Carton and all that. So, Boulevard Brewing, it's interesting that you just said where you came. Like, it's amazing that you're here. Like, are you from there, or?
I grew up in Bergen County, New Jersey. Oh. I happen to be the representative in charge of managing New Jersey for Boulevard Brewing Company.
Okay.
The brewery is new to the state. We started sales and distribution in mid-September of this year. And like we said before, New Jersey was one of the first expansion markets. So we have a wonderful wholesaler behind us, Peerless Beverage.
Yeah,
and we've done an incredible launch
tonight.
And that's why we're here. We're part of their craft portfolio, and we're bringing our high-quality craft beers from the Midwest to the East Coast.
So are you a brewer yourself, or?
I've homebrewed in the past, but no, I'm not a brewer. I'm a representative, a spokesman, and an aficionado, an enthusiast about craft beer. So.
Okay. So I've asked every person that came on tonight, an event like this, like a brew fest, a community kind of thing, a thing going to charity, this has to be great for any brewery to come by, even if you're the big breweries, and getting someone that never tasted your shit. But like as a Boulevard Brewing Company based out of, you know, way away from here, just getting someone to have a taste of your beer and experience it and be like, wow, that's good. How do I get in touch with you, or where can I get your stuff? That has to be a great experience. Like,
yeah, it's really an invaluable experience because nowadays when you look at the shelf set, you go into a beer store or a supermarket, and the consumer tends to be overwhelmed by the amount of different packages, sizes, shapes, colors, if
right.
you will. So a chance for the consumer or the customer to taste your beer now, and then they have the opportunity tomorrow, the next day, to go shopping for your beer. I can't say enough how that would impact our business positively moving forward.
Yes. So here's a question I've also asked every brewer
7
that came on. Why does everyone in the beer industry have an awesome beer?
You can't sell beer without a beer.
I don't think you can.
No,
I don't think it's possible.
New Jersey laws.
I think if a guy clean shaven would sell me a beer,
I don't trust him.
I'd be like, I don't get you, man. I don't get you. You've got a nice trim beard. Like it's very
you saw
manicured.
Me a week ago, the girlfriend didn't like it. I've had to clean up. Had a few meetings lately.
It's always the women that trim the beard, you know?
It grows and then we trim back and then it expands and contracts.
It's like so life, you know, like we
constantly evolving.
But so you work, so is this the only company you work for, or you work for multiple companies?
Boulevard Brewing Company is blessed to be part of the Duvel-Morcott family of ales.
Okay.
Duvel-Morcott is one of the more premier Belgian brewers.
Yes.
And it's an international company in terms of
Duvel in general is a great, everything I've had from them is great usually, you know, like awesome.
So Boulevard is the second acquisition, American acquisition of the Duvel-Morcott family. North America, in terms of a consumer base, is the new frontier, the uncharted frontier, where Europe and foreign markets for so long held the heavyweight title of best brewers. England, Belgium, Czechoslovakia, Germany. We're talking about fantastic brewing nations. And now, after about 30 years of craft beer in the United States, Europe is finally looking at America on an equal playing field and respecting the beer that's coming out of here enough where it's interpreting it and adapting it and making its own in Europe. You've got Brooklyn just opened a brewery in Stockholm a couple years ago. Stone broke ground on a brewery in Munich. The idea, and talking to my Belgian counterparts, American craft beer could not be hotter in Europe. It's all about hops. It's all about American sours, wild ales.
To be honest, I've been drinking craft beer for probably close to 10 years now. I don't think there's anything better in America. I don't. I think people hear America, they go, oh, Budweiser, blah, blah, blah. But the variety in America, I think, is unmatched. It's unmatched. I've been to Europe, there's similar styles, but the variety, the amount of different things going on in America right now, I think, is unmatched. I think it's unmatched. Between the IPA scene and the stout scene and just the crazy experiments in America, and I think we're killing it. I think in another 20 years, we're going to be the beer capital of the world. I really do.
Well, we got to watch out for Italy. They make great food, great wine, and they're going to be one of the next... You want to throw Peroni out there, but you can quote me now by saying in about 20 years, 25 years, Italy will be the next great brewing nation globally.
I can see that.
The passion that they have for their food, wine, women, etc., they're putting it in their craft beer. We just haven't heard of these breweries yet, but I mark my words, Italy
is
where
it's at. It's really interesting because last year for my anniversary, I went out to the beer area on top of... Italy in New York City, where the Dogfish pairing with the Barrera brothers or whatever the hell their name is, phenomenal beer. So I could see where you're coming from, like where there's that culinary and all that goes hand in hand. You know,
craft beer is about care, love, attention to detail, and Italy's already had that in its culture for centuries. It just hasn't accepted beer to the degree of wine. Beer has always been the second tier to wine, but now we're approaching this equal playing field. So nations like Italy, France, I would not be surprised if they quickly rise to the ranks of top brewers in the world the next 20 years, 30 years.
But you know
thanks
what?
To America.
Let's stand strong. Yeah. USA, Hulk Hogan right now is drinking an American beer. Boulevard Brewing, what is the long-term goal here? Like, what's going on in the future here for Boulevard? Are they growing? Are they going for more distribution? What's happening on Boulevard?
Boulevard's really kept their business to the Midwest, and now we're rolling it out. So the idea is that these are everyday beers for the craft beer enthusiast. Kind of have three different tiers of products, kind of some everyday entry-level beers, and then we graduate you to our Smokestack series, which the Tank 7 is the flagship. It's a little bit more complex and sophisticated, and then we've got some limited-release Smokestack beers like Saison Brett or Rye on Rye or Love Child Number 4, but what my experience about Boulevard tell me is that they tend to seek very traditional flavors in a traditional manner. So talking about brewing with barrel-aged beers, lactobacillus, Brettanomyces. So the roundabout way of achieving these traditional European flavors, styles, for lack of a better term. So really interesting in that we're reinterpreting the old world here in the new world.
Where can you see them building the next market in America? Can you see it still up here in the Northeast, or you see something like in the Californias, the Colorados?
That's a great question. We're already in Colorado and Northern California to a small degree. We've kind of hand-selected certain markets. New Jersey, Philly, and South Florida, really great beer states. They were all on the docket for 2014 to open up. 2015, the first new market's going to be Ohio. Columbus and Cleveland have a burgeoning craft beer scene. And you'll see other states kind of follow suit to Ohio and the few that I just mentioned. But it's a lot about our distributor relationships in terms of you can't just decide to sell beer tomorrow in a new state. It's a very calculated thing. So the idea in the next 5 years is all 50 states.
All right, man. First of all, I want to thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
Boulevard, both beers you brought today, which, why don't you tell what they were, first off?
We brought two beers today. Tank 7 is our flagship ale, the Smokestack Series. It's an 8.5% farmhouse ale or Saison style.
That was very good, by the way. That was my favorite of the two.
A little bit of our Belgian yeast in there, and then we dry hop that beer as well. So, again, bridging the old world with the new world. Then we also brought two Jokers, which is a limited release smokestack ale. It's a Belgian style double wit. Again, using that Belgian strain of yeast, but we put a little coriander in there. And also a little lactobacillus goes into the process pre-boil. So kind of like a sour mash, but not really. So the idea is to achieve that tartness, that acidity that was in traditional Belgian wits several centuries ago. But again, in a traditional route to a traditional style. So we brought two today, and it went over really well.
So if you could, last question, if you could, so people who never heard of Boulevard Brewing, if you could give like a profile of your beer, you know, like some people are experimental, some are traditional. Like, what would, if I went to Boulevard today, what am I expecting?
Full flavor with a heck of a lot of balance. The idea is these beers, too, are also very food friendly, so they're not necessarily polarizing. A lot of flavor, a lot of hops, a lot of aroma, but again, at the end of the day, balance. You know, these need to be drinkable, sessionable. I want to have another type beer.
All right, man. Last thing, do chicks dig guys who brew?
I'll be brewing tomorrow.
Yeah. Do they or no? I don't know.
I think it's all about the power, you know? They dig chefs. They dig guys.
They dig
that make
chefs. It, yeah. They love artists. It's about time for the brewer to get some girls.
Yeah. All in due time.
Comedians as well.
Hey, well, comedians, please. They don't like comedians.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're like, be funny, and then you're not off stage, and it's like, eh. Anyway, I want to thank you for coming on, man.
Scott,
it was a freaking great interview, man. Let's enjoy the last half hour.
Let's
here.
Let's do it.
All
Let's
right.
raise another beer.
All right. Another guest sat down at the Shenanigans table here. We are joined by Sarah. Sarah, you are obviously a female.
Of course I am.
Yes. So it's great to see a female at a brew festival, okay?
Oh,
and you know what the stereotype is. Like, women don't love beer.
Yeah.
They
like wine.
And hence why I'm wearing a wine glass
around
my neck.
Well, you are wearing a wine glass, so you are buying into the stereotype. But you're at a brew fest right now. Why?
Well, one thing is, I'm part Italian. Me and my mother, we love wine. We cook with it. We drink with it all the time. But, of course, I also do love my beers. Because I figure beer is like wine. You sit and you enjoy it. There's a taste to it, etc., etc., etc. It, like, wine takes a while to brew. Same thing with, like, the ingredients with beer. So that's always one thing I always enjoy.
I mean, that's amazing. Just coming off of the last interview where they... What were you talking about with our friend from Boulevard, where he said the next market, like the international market to brew beers, he predicts it's Italy just because of the passion they have for wine, for food, for life itself. Mm. It's just one of those things where they're known for their wine, but when they're starting to get into that brewery thing where you can see it coming to that next level.
Anything that you make, if it's hard alcohol like vodka or whiskey, even wine or beer, there's a craft to it no matter what. Like, if you make it on your own or it's like a big name brand, like, say, like Yellowtail to Budweiser to Jameson to Absolut, Smirnoff, there's always going to be like some form of a craft right there. Beer and wine would be on a crafting level, I say.
So, what was the best beer you tried tonight? Your favorite.
Oh my God, there's so many.
a lot of good ones. But what one stood out?
Well, typically in the manufacturing states, I go for the Goose Island 312. That's the
good
wheat
one.
Beer. That's basically my go-to one. So far, there's been a few that has been there. And
Bothers me about Goose Island, though. They're owned by Anheuser-Busch now.
I know. That's a hard
one. That bothers me.
Yeah.
They were killing it, and then they could have made it on their own.
Yeah.
But That is a very good beer.
It is.
They still let that brewery do their thing, mm-hmm. but they are distributed by Anheuser-Busch.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, mwah, mwah.
Yeah. It's sad at the end of the day, and you see that check in your hand, are you going to say, no, I'm not going to catch it?
If Anheuser-Busch was like, we're going to do the Verbal Shenanigans podcast every week, I'd be like, I'm drinking a Bud today, and yeah. I fucking love it.
Bud Ice, amazing, the best beer ever made.
But you gotta go for the classic Budweiser, right?
But here's a question: as a female who loves beer,
yes,
Do you find that most women drink wine and like mixed drinks? Mm-hmm. Is that a social thing, or is that a I don't want to try it kind of thing? Because there's so much great shit out there.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like it's just society that says, this is what you're supposed to drink or whatever.
My thing
But it's
is,
the same yeah. thing with, like, a man. Hmm. Like, I have an uncle who, he can't stand beer. He drinks, like, yeah. Smirnoff Ice. Like, no, who cares, you know? Like,
it's your tongue.
It's a social thing. I really do.
There's two things. It's a social thing and your tongue. I know some people, like, with me and Gase, I can't do straight vodka. It's always mixed. But I prefer Gentleman's Jack. Like, I'll do whiskeys.
Yep.
But, and then, of course, there's people that's like, oh, give me a lot of sugar, give me a lot of beer, and just, like, go, chug, chug, chug. So it's, like, people that enjoy it or just people that just, like, want to drink it.
When did you start drinking craft beer?
Let me think. I think the minute I turned 21, I realized there's actually taste in things.
So 21, yeah.
Yeah. Right, I went to college at 18, drank crap for 2 years, but of course I stuck with the good stuff, like Budweiser. Never did that Natty Ice stuff.
What was your shit college beer? Mine was Busch Light.
I couldn't do Busch Light. You
want to know why I did Busch Light? Because it was $10.99 a 30 pack at my school.
Yeah.
Mine was PBR.
PBR.
Well, I could do PBR. I can never do Natty Ice. That's just me.
Oh, but, it's terrible.
Yeah. But Bud Light, Coors Light, like I could do that. Yingling was my go-to beer all the time.
See, Yingling's good and still cheap. Like, I still put Yinglings in the fridge. Because they're like, you know, it's a good beer. And it's like,
seem outside that Budweiser range. You just want to know.
They're still family-owned.
I mean, they've been here forever, but at the same time, you're still like, yeah, I don't see you like those other guys.
But I lived in New Hampshire for 4 years for college. They never had Yingling. So I would have all my friends. I had one friend from New York. From Skagway, but by Syracuse. And he basically loved Yingling. So we always just pack our fridges up with Yingling. And every person we had from Massachusetts, Maine, New Hampshire would rob us of Yingling. Oh, yeah.
So it's like, it's funny because, like, interesting story that the place I vacationed with my family in upstate New York was owned by the Yinglings. And
really?
It has their name on, like the whole, like, it's an old shithole now, but in the day it was like a beautiful hotel and everything. It was owned by the Yinglings. There's a picture with FDR. Like,
really?
Really interesting. But it's like, I don't know. It's a proven fact that good beer has always been a way to bring people together. And
it is.
That's
it
what
is.
This whole kind of thing is about. And I don't know. That's the way I feel about it. It's like a social thing.
Exactly. Good beer, good wine, a good bottle of scotch. It's a soca class. It just brings it all together. Mm, it does.
You
can't even think of the question anymore, right?
I had it.
I know.
I mean, you're talking about the different... things you drink up. What do you say is like the biggest factor in deciding what you want to drink if you're being social, whether it's a beer, is it the weather, is it the company?
One thing, weather is a big thing. If it's day drinking out in the summer on a lake, on a boat, there's always one choice. If you're going down like on a deck, or you're just going night, summer, day, winter, getting off the slopes. There's a lot of factors involved. It's like what you're doing, it's like what's going on. If it's a shit day, if I could apologize, be sense to me.
Oh, no.
It's fun.
Say any word you want.
It's a shit day, it's a beautiful day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's tons of factors right there, so.
Yeah.
So what would you, as a woman who likes beer, what would you like to tell those prissy freaking douchebag ladies about beer?
You gotta enjoy
it. Drop your guard.
Yeah, drop your guard. Don't be a stuck-up bitch.
That's it.
Yeah. And just try it, seriously. Come to a brew fest, like right here. Like the big brew. Come to a brew fest. Try things.
That's it.
Yeah, just basically. You're going to spend $10 on a bottle of wine, spend $10 on a six-pack of beer. Good beer.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. And one, because you share my favorite color, which is flannel.
I wanted to show up as a Christmas lumberjack, that's why.
Yeah, I am
I lost the ugly sweater contest tonight.
Aunt Furlough, he's probably never seen me in anything but flannel. This is actually, today he was like, nice sweater.
Her friend just came over and touched her on the head for some reason.
Mm, yeah.
So I entered the ugly sweater contest without even knowing it, which is sad. But thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, too.
It was great. Check out the podcast, all right?
I will. Bye-bye. Thank you.
So, what can I say about this podcast?
We got time. That's God saying wrap it up.
Continue.
So, what can I say about this podcast? It's an amazing thing to come to a festival, not just because it's like beer, which I love, but it's amazing. The fun thing is talking to actual fucking people, because we get lost in this day and age talking on text, and even amongst your friends, like how often you ever like hear their voice. Like today, Mike, I called you. I can't even remember the last time I called you.
I was thinking that same thing.
I was like, this is weird. I'm
like, we don't talk
Mike.
On the phone.
Yeah. No one does.
No.
And actually, in some ways, that's a good thing. But when it comes to sitting down with people who are passionate about what they do, whether it's an artist, whether it's a chef, a comedian, a musician, it's a great thing to sit and hear someone's point of view, why I'm here, why my beer is better than why you should try it. And it's a supportive community. And, like, trust me, in the comedy community, as young as I am in it, there's not that together feeling in it as far as, like, the brewer's world. Taryn, I'm sure as an artist, it's a competitive goddamn field. Everyone's art is better than the next person's art or something like that. But it's very nice when you can get together with people with big-ass beards and just talk about how much you love beer. You know, like, and that's it. And that's the common ground and how much you love just talking to people and saying, hey, that's a good beer. Hey, that's okay beer. Hey, this is a great beer. Hey, I tried this. And that's it. You know, like... I don't know how you feel as an artist, because you're in the community where you are an artist, you're a graphic designer. It's got to be super competitive, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's competitive, but it's like, you know, at least in one of these situations, you have like a bunch of artists who are basically brewers. You know, you have all these brewers here. They're presenting their art at like a brew festival. To me, it's kind of like when you go to something like Comic-Con or like a... You know, I visited San Francisco recently. They had, like, a comic festival, whatever. There's all these, like, small-ass people who are just making their own shit. They just want to make their own thing, and they're kind of out there promoting their own artwork, no matter what it is. And it's the same idea when you come to one of these places, because although at this particular brew fest there were a lot of big breweries, there's also a lot of small breweries that are presenting their particular artwork.
Yeah.
You know, you got, raspberry rye stouts and things like that that are really pretty creative for what you want to see out of a brew fest. Because when you come here, you want to see something unique. You don't want to get like average run-of-the-mill beer. It's the same exact thing here. It's like you're gonna gravitate to the people with the good artwork, and that's basically good beer here. You know, so I think that it's the same vibe. It's the same vibe of community where if people feel like somebody did something really unique, they want to talk to them about how they came up with that idea. It's the same thing.
Mike Camacho, final thoughts.
And I think you guys probably accomplished that tonight. I mean, you guys interviewed a bunch of breweries, right? Some pretty big names, some small names. I mean, Bolero Snort is one of the newer ones, I think, to come out of nowhere.
Yep, they make some good stuff, man.
Yeah, I just had Angry Eric and Bolero Snort.
Great. Angry Eric's great.
Like 5 minutes ago, I had their
great
stuff.
New Jersey shit.
Yeah, New Jersey, they don't fuck around with their beers. Like, great, they got some good beers, man. Bolero Snort had a delicious pumpkin beer.
Yep.
What did I have from Angry Eric? I had
the cardamom one?
I had the other one, the Belgian one. Yeah. That was delicious. delicious. Very good.
The great brewery.
I remember you guys, you went there, you said. You went there.
Great brewery, nice. Right down the road, literally right there.
Like, around here?
3 miles down.
Where are they? What city?
I want to say Lafayette.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Okay. But yeah, and I was just telling Taryn here, I was like, the good thing about these brew fests, beer fests, is a lot of social aspect about it. You can talk to a lot of people about it. You all have the same interests, obviously. And you don't have to feel like you're getting judged at all. You can talk to anybody, you know? Be like, we were having some random conversations by the bonfire over there, and, you know, it was just so casual. And I think that's a really cool part of these things, and that's why I keep coming to these, you know?
Michael Berlow, final thoughts.
Well, it's just a great community kind of thing out here. I mean, if you think about it, all these breweries we talk to, none of them are like, we're going to be number one in a couple years or we're going to take down Anheuser-Busch or anything like that. Nobody's sitting back going, I don't know why these cider people are here. I mean, even when I was outside with the food trucks, they were all just laughing, having a good time, getting great business. It's just a very comforting kind of thing to join people together. And as we talk to the brewers, and we just talk to random people who walked up, you know, whether they've had 5 beers or 20 beers. It's just a great little conversation and just a great little community. And it was a hell of a night tonight.
So it's going to bring me down to my last final thoughts. Brewing is a beautiful art that is, it's an imperfect art, which is why I love it. You are always at bay to what the yeast is going to do, what the ingredients are going to do, if it's the freshest, the best, the this and that. But it comes down to a labor of love. How much do you want to put into it? It's the same thing with art or comedy or music or movies or directing, anything like that. It's how far do you want to go? And if you want it, you can make it. And that's what's a beautiful story about, you want to say America, I feel like I'm preaching like a presidential candidate here. But it's America. You know what? You have the ability to turn things off or turn things on and do your own thing. And if you don't like it, you can make your own way into the business. Whatever it is. So I'm going to sign off from the Big Brew Fest, which I've been promoting for three, four weeks now. Yep. Oh. And it's like, it's kind of sad that it's ending, but it's been a fantastic day here. It's been a beautiful day here. And I want to just say thank you to God. I don't even want to say thank you to everyone. I just want, because the list is so long.
I have written on a piece of cardboard.
I have everything written on a piece of cardboard here. But thank you to everyone who made this day special for our podcast and made the day special just for having people in the community come out and have a taste of beer and talk to someone that you may have never talked to someone before. This is the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. Subscribe on Stitcher. Subscribe on iTunes. You can check me out at the Johnny Watson Show. Other than that, keep the wind at your back, and I love you. Life is funny. Laugh at it.
Later, people.